Okay. Hello and welcome, everybody. My name is Alan Elsner. I'm the Communications Director at the Israel Project. On behalf of our entire team, I'm very pleased that you can join us to hear today from the Mayor of Jerusalem, Nir Barkat. Today's briefing with Mr. Barkat is on the record. Just a couple of words about our organization for those who haven't heard the spiel. This project is an international non-profit organization dedicated to providing journalists accurate information about Israel. We are not related to any government or government agency. We have offices in Washington, D.C. and Jerusalem, and we also have our New York representative, Jennifer Packer. Our team of experts and former journalists is always ready to help you get the facts you need to cover the Middle East, so please don't ever hesitate to contact us if we can help you in any way at all. And now, without further ado, I would like to introduce you to our speaker today. Mayor Nir Barkat was elected Jerusalem's ninth mayor on November 11th, 2008. Members of the City Council have formed a wide coalition to support Mayor Barkat. He's joined together with the left and the right, the secular and the religious, in order to move Jerusalem forward. Immediately prior to his election as mayor, Nir Barkat served as opposition leader of the City Council for 5 years. Based on his deep understanding of the issues that face Jerusalem, Mayor Barkat set out on a path of active civic engagement and reform of the City Council and beyond to address education, negative migration of Jerusalem's young adults, and the need for lasting economic development. He founded Snunit. Mm-hmm. I got the intro.
Yep.
A non-profit organization and the largest educational website in Hebrew, and Startup Jerusalem, which encourages the creation of jobs in Jerusalem through economic growth and marketing guidance. His early successes as mayor are rooted in his business methods and entrepreneurial approach to City Hall. And now, Mayor Barkat, I'll turn the floor over to you, and then we'll move after your introduction to Q&A. Thank you.
Thank you very much. It's a pleasure meeting you, some of you not for the first time. For the benefit of the few of you that never met me before, I got engaged in philanthropy 15 years ago after I've done for my home in business, and through that got exposed to the challenges of the city of Jerusalem, understanding and intimately more understanding the trends in the city of Jerusalem and the huge potential. And I retired from all my business activities 8 years ago. Ever since, I work for a shekel a year. I'm independent, don't belong to any party. And what motivates me is to make a difference in the future of the city. Jerusalem is one of the strongest brands in the world, practically second to nothing. 3.5 billion people on earth believe Jerusalem is the center of the world in many aspects, and would like to come and visit Jerusalem at least once in their lifetime. That is a huge potential for such a city that so far is practically almost untapped. As a business entrepreneur, I believe that we should develop the city of Jerusalem for the benefit of the world to enjoy, to have more and more people of faith be able to come and visit and explore and share the city. Freedom of religion was never as powerful as it is in the last 43 years since Jerusalem was reunited. It's a strategy for us to maintain the openness and the international elements of the city of Jerusalem, where Muslims manage their sites, Christians manage their sites, and Jews manage their own sites. Freedom of religion is second to no other term since the destruction of the temple 2,000 years ago. And my goal that I put for the team in Jerusalem is to scale from just over 2 million tourists a few years ago to 10 million tourists a year, to be able to take or to send back home 10 million ambassadors of peace in the world, of Jerusalem lovers, to develop the infrastructure of Jerusalem to cope with the challenge. Through economic growth, we know that everywhere economic growth is developing, it mediates people. I'm focused on the common denominator of people, and that is how to create Jerusalem a destination as it was 2,000 and 3,000 years ago for all people in the world. Positioning or putting such a goal in front of us, I see already in the last 2 years, has significant impact on the people of the city of Jerusalem. First, we've scaled and we've broken all records last year. 2010 was a breaking record year where we hit, we passed 3.5 million tourists. The hotel industry's occupancy went up 24% in Jerusalem. Culture is flourishing in Jerusalem. People realize that something good is happening in our city. And I want to take that feeling, which is local and in a way a bit international, we want to take it, drive it to the international marketplace and actually develop more and more tourism to the city of Jerusalem. It's in the best interest of the world. It's in the best interest of all residents of the city of Jerusalem. Everyone gains. It's the role Jerusalem has to play in the world. And from it, we derive lots of little strategies of how to do better marketing, better sales, how to close gaps in the city of Jerusalem, close gaps in infrastructure, in planning. I come from the business world, and I find that there's very big gaps in the planning process in the city. The physical master plan, which I'm sure you will probably want to know a little bit more. The physical master plan is derived partially from the vision and partially from closing the gaps and understanding how the city is scaling and growing. We are now allocated about 1 million square meters, that's 10 million square feet, of office space for business and commerce in the entry to the city, the new city, what we call. We're developing a significant amount of sports activities and culture facilities. We want to develop 1 million square meters, 10 million square feet of industry. And we anticipate natural growth of the population of the city of Jerusalem from 800,000 people strong to 1 million people strong in the next 20 years. We are building, that means a 200,000 people natural addition to the city of Jerusalem. That means 50,000 apartments. And the master plan in Jerusalem talks about expansion of Arab neighborhoods and Jewish neighborhoods. We believe the expansion will be naturally a third Arab, two-thirds Jewish, which is the ratio of the population today. And we can show in the master plan where different neighborhoods expand to meet that challenge. So the master plan talks about both business, hotel industry, and residential growth. From that master plan, we derive our permits. From the master plan, we derive our strategy. It is to enable Jerusalem to scale to the opportunity and deal with the needs, the residential needs of all the different constituencies, Christian, Muslims, and Jews. I could say that in the planning process in the last year and a half, I think we've got a good formula that we would like to scale of how to re-plan and rezone some of the neighborhoods, and I'm sure you'll be, if you have any more interest, I'll be happy to expand on Q&A. People ask me how it is in the last 2 years to be mayor. It's my first 2 years, and I answer to everybody that it's better than I expected. There's a good response, good acknowledgement from the professional team in the municipality. On the ground, we have created some very positive momentum, which everyone benefits from, and we've really started the professional restart button in many neighborhoods in order to gain much, much better a planning process for the benefit of all residents of the city of Jerusalem. I will stop here. I'd prefer to answer most of your questions.
Okay, thank you very much. Who's got the first question? Yes, Richard.
In the planning you're doing, the master plan, is there provision or acknowledgement that half the city might become the capital of a Palestinian state, or this has no bearing on what you do?
No bearing on what we do whatsoever.
So, as far as you're concerned, it's not going to happen?
Yes.
And you're planning for it not to happen?
It's not going to happen. It's not natural. It's the wrong thing to do for any perspective. There's not one good example in the world of a split city that ever worked, was ever functional. It's my strategy, and I believe a government strategy, and not only the Jewish people, but the world. It would be a big mistake to go that route, that in advance we know that there's not one comparable, one good example for a working model of a split city. Therefore, it's not on the table.
That's pretty clear.
We'll try to be very clear.
Secretary Clinton and Ban Ki-moon, I don't think they agree with you because they condemned the demolishment of the hotel. What do you say to them?
I say that one must apply one standard, be very honest. The reality of what happened, and if people do their due diligence right, they will find that we're talking about a piece of property that was owned legally by Jewish owners. They've asked to develop the land according to the zoning code with no extra demands or requests. They've been granted permission like they would be granted in any city, in any country in the world. They've been granted permission a year ago, and it's private property. Nobody could tell them if they, as long as they're working according to the law, and they are, nobody could tell them not to reuse their property like you do anywhere else in the world. So it's standard procedures, global procedures, and if anybody is requesting or demanding anything else, I ask them by which law and by what's the philosophy behind telling somebody that he cannot build on his own property according to the working to the zoning code.
But this isn't like anywhere else in the world.
Well, it is.
And this is seen as, how do you see this as being in the interest of peace?
I see it very straightforward, as the same way that their Arab neighbors could build according to the zoning code, get a permit and build, so can Jews. And anybody trying to freeze by race, it's anti-constitutional, it's double standards, and it's not acceptable.
So you're just going to disregard the opposition that this is engendered?
Of course, because the reality is that it's legal, and anybody that is requesting to freeze by race, check in your own country under your own law if this request is not double standard, if it's legal. It's not legal in any law, under any law, to try to differentiate and discriminate by race or by anything else. Israeli law does not discriminate. I think American law does not discriminate. And I don't understand the rationale behind the request.
Would Arabs be allowed to live in this building that's being built?
Arabs, there are more Arabs that build, that live in Jewish neighborhoods than Jews in Arab neighborhoods. And as mayor of Jerusalem, I'm committed to make sure that rule of law is applied everywhere, that people build by the zoning code. It's not my business and not anybody's business if Jews or Arabs rent to each other or sell to each other.
I'm sorry, you say it's unconstitutional, but there is a movement of some religious leaders to try to get Jewish landowners not to rent to Arabs in various parts of the country. I don't know if that's happening in Jerusalem.
And vice versa. And vice versa.
You condemn that then?
I condemn both. I condemn both Arabs that are not selling to Jews, and I condemn Jews that are not selling to Arabs. It's not legal, and I condemn both.
When EU diplomats come to Israel and to Jerusalem, obviously they meet with the Netanyahu government. Do you talk to them as well? Do you?
Yeah, sometimes.
On occasion?
Yeah.
What do you tell them when they ask you these kinds of questions?
Exactly what I told you. It's very straightforward, simple. And by the way, we're very open and transparent, so we share the plans, and I recommend them that if they have any question, they can come and ask, and we'll provide all the information about specific case or general case. And I strongly recommend people to do their due diligence wisely and look at the master plan and understand that it's an honest and fair that deals with all the needs of the city of Jerusalem. And you cannot freeze such an important city. You cannot freeze by race. You cannot freeze only public or residential. The city is flourishing. It's developing very well. And one mustn't stop Jerusalem.
Does the national government have any veto at all over your plans? I mean, do you have to go to them and say, this is what I want to do?
Theoretically, they have a veto power, but the plan has been discussed and been accepted by the government. The government likes the plan. And so I assume that if there was something they didn't like, they can either veto it on the district committee or give me a call and tell me that something they don't like. But neither happens. So even if anything, that's on the contrary. The government is supportive of the planning process and is supportive of the actual facts on the ground.
Can you tell us how many non-Jews, Palestinian Arabs, have been given permission over the last year or 2 years to buy land and do such things?
Well, the people don't need permission to buy land. They can go in the, to private property and buy it. I mean, you don't need permission. It's between two residents. Like in the States, do you need permission to buy from somebody? Same here. As long as you build according to the law, the Israeli government, the municipality of Jerusalem, myself, we're not interested to know if the person, what is person's religion. But to expand on the point that you raised in terms of the number of building permits, what I found is it's a very complicated situation in some of the Arab neighborhoods. And I'd like to share and expand a little bit on that. I'm sure it's of interest to you. Let's take the example of Silwan, which I did my pilot in better understanding how to structure new zoning code through the experience of Silwan, and now we're expanding that to four additional big neighborhoods, bigger than Silwan. And I've committed by the end of my term to start rezoning of all Arab neighbors in East Jerusalem. This is a significant challenge. But I'll share with the pilot, then we'll expand on that. The hill of Silwan, the upper side of Silwan, has 658 buildings. Can you guess how many have a license? Go low. Six. You're close, because seven are in the process, but okay, so that's 1% with a license. That means 99% of the buildings did not get a permit. You were allowed in this old zoning code to build two stories. 50% of the buildings are over two stories. And when I came in office, this is then the situation in Silwan. Also, not all land is registered, so there's no proof of ownership to the vast majority of the houses, which is an obstacle to give somebody a license. How do you know if it's his land or not? So there's legal barriers, there are practical barriers. The neighborhood was never planned for such scope. So the services, even if we wanted to improve services, we cannot do that right now. We're talking about infrastructure for water. There's no fire hydrants in the neighborhood. The roads are too narrow, and it was never planned to such a scope. I had two very bad options. The first is to continue being an ostrich, take one case or the other to court because they're all illegal. The reality is there are 42 cases after, you know, already the courts decided on 42 cases of taking down the legal structures. I'm talking about 42 cases. But there's only 12% of the houses have a file, legal file. 88% of the houses don't have any legal file. A lot of them are not even in the database of the municipality. So it's quite a mess. Again, so I could have continued being an ostrich, which of course I'm not going to be. The other extreme alternative is to take them all to court. It doesn't make too much sense. And I decided to press the restart button and rezone the neighborhood. And what we've done after a bit of a methodological search, we've overlaid the old plan with reality, with the air photos, and redefined the road structure and redefined the open areas. The coding, the rezoning will go up to four stories. Only 20 buildings are over four stories. In other words, just 3%. We're now developing a methodology of how to enable people, even if we don't have full proof of ownership, to get a permit, temporary permit at least, so that we can actually start developing the what we call the public skeleton of the public needs and start working on that and enable more the critical mass of the residents to get a license.
Retroactive licenses, I suppose.
Yeah, well, they've got there's some security issues and there's a couple of other issues that we have to deal with. It's not an automatic license. We want to make sure that people But it's the vast majority of them that we would like to give a retroactive license, yes, in many ways. I've passed this planning process in the local committee with no objection. People are not aware of that. No objection. Not the left and not the right of the people in the municipality did not object to this. I brought this to the Knesset, to the parliament, and showed this in a few, two committees. Both the Jews and the Arabs like the plan because it has merit, it has some vision, it has a light at the end of the tunnel for them. And now we want to pass it on to the district committee, and after it's passed in the district committee, it becomes fully legal, and the rest is much easier to work with. I've requested the government, in the meantime, while we do the rezoning, to stop all court cases. Not the one Jewish building, all the 42 cases. The rationale behind that is the vast majority of them will be obsolete anyway after the rezoning process. Because if you were allowed, you know, if you were illegal and you built four stories, now you can get it legal. So why are we in a rush to develop any specific case? It was not accepted by the General Council of the government. By the way, they did not give me permission to stop all the court cases at this point. But we're making a major effort relative to what we can to postpone all the cases until we get the rezoning permit done. Hopefully, once we... And by the way, I've already started all of the legal procedures that we can to derive from the new rezoning process, which decreases the tension from 99% of the population to maximum 3% of the population. And even then, if they shave off a few stories, they will be able to get a license. And so we're developing methodologies of how to really crack the code of how to get out of the situation that I received the city. It's a challenge, and I'm extremely busy in this process to make sure that we can actually go through a path of developing the neighbors in East Jerusalem. We've already declared that we will expand that to Isawiya, Arab Sawakhre, Umlisun, and Wadi Asul. And there is a quest from the residents for more and more neighborhoods to follow that path. We're starting a private-public partnership with them, where the residents collect some capital, we will put some of our ability. And actually, I would like to expand that. We're right now, it's not easy because each neighborhood that you take on like this, it's a lot of work, a lot of hard labor and hard work of skilled people that we're now starting to work in parallel. So that's where we are in the rezoning process in East Jerusalem, and I believe that this is the right thing to do, and we will make that happen.
When you talk to people in these neighborhoods in East Jerusalem, do they tell you that they prefer to stay under Israel? Do they reject sort of a push for to make that a Palestinian capital, an Arab capital?
It's first of all, there's what they say on the record and off the record is very different.
What do they tell you off the record?
Off the record, they know where the margarine is on the bread. They know which part. Do you understand my point? The analogy is, they know exactly where they're better off. They know where they get better hospital treatment, where there's a real democracy. They would like to see, and I think that genuinely they are complaining, and they're still mistrusting the movements that we're doing. There's lots of spins all over the place. And they would like to yet see that what we're saying will be fulfilled. And I accept that challenge that they're putting. They will find out, as other residents in the city of Jerusalem, that what we say is what we mean, and what we mean is what we say. It's just a matter of time, I believe, that they will gain confidence and understand that indeed I'm serving all residents of the city of Jerusalem. Once that happens, I believe the trend will change, maybe even on the record.
One of the big complaints has been that middle-class Jews are leaving Jerusalem in droves. Can you tell me what you're doing to stop that? Because obviously that's partly your bread and butter, correct?
Yeah. Well, there, in few a few things. First of all, economic growth is key to everything. By getting to 10 million tourists, that alone is 140,000 new jobs. It creates lots of opportunities for entrepreneurs in culture, in tourism, side by side to cultural tourism, which is one business cluster. I've been working with Professor Michael Porter from Harvard Business School, which helped me throughout the years to develop this model, to also focus on health life science business model. Jerusalem is very powerful and strong, and has huge potential in that specific space. That's due to the fact that the Hebrew University is extremely powerful in generic research in health life sciences, one of the top 10 in the world. Hadassah and Shaare Tzedek, the hospitals, are very strong research hospitals and provide excellent service. We've got a number of very strong pharmaceuticals, naturally Teva, Rafa, and about 100 startups in this space. By analyzing this, we've actually created a number of subsidies, and we anticipate growth of the current industry. That's before we bring in more more players to create the cluster, by thousands of new jobs in the next 5 years. Anywhere between 2,000 to 3,000 new jobs, which is a very nice growth in Jerusalem standards. So job opportunities is the number one reason why people leave. This is the number one reason why people hopefully will stay. The second is quality of life. By making Jerusalem a cultural center, it has a big halo effect on quality of life in the city of Jerusalem, and we already feel increase of satisfaction of the young population that were leaving in the past. These trends take some time. They don't happen in one day, but I believe that's the second thing that we're changing. The third parameter is housing. And that goes back to the question of building in the city of Jerusalem. If you stop, freeze building in the city of Jerusalem, Arabs will build illegally and Jews will leave the city. That's why you must develop both for Jews and Arabs. For Arabs so that they will be able to build safely under rule of law, number one. And the Jews, we've got to build to create more apartments so that the young population that would like to stay in the city will not leave. And land is scarce, so we have very limited options of how to build, and it's not that complicated. Whoever sees the plan understands that we need to build more apartments in Jerusalem for all population, ultra-Orthodox, Zionist population, and the Arab population. So it's jobs, it's quality of life, it's the price of housing, and quality of education, which if you'd like, I'll expand on what we're doing there as well.
Please.
We've actually, I brought in methods more, the best analogy for what we're doing in Jerusalem is the way that Joel Klein and Mayor Bloomberg did in New York, is developing Jerusalem to, in a way, manage a portfolio of schools and use portfolio management concepts taken from the business world. Lots of measurement, hold the principals accountable for goals and measurable achievements in the schools. And open up choice for people. The magnet concept is something that generally we're applying in the city of Jerusalem, and enabling best schools with strong demand to expand on behalf of schools that are lagging behind. By doing that, we're actually elevated the role of principals. We're fundraising, we're bringing significant amount of capital, both in technology, pedagogic, cutting-edge things, which is the world I know well, and we're actually making Jerusalem a destination for innovation in education, which draws lots of talent, talented principals, talented teachers, and investors. Altogether, we've shown in the last 2 years significant growth in matriculation eligibility in Jerusalem. These are not fully public information yet, but we believe that in first year, my office in last year, we've jumped from below the average in the country to above the average in the country in 1 year, which is approximately 10 points. Besides that, we've shown that if in the last term the children population in the secular schooling system shrunk 12%, in the last 2 years there's no decrease. So the stability. And the national religious schooling system shrunk 7% and there's a small increase in the last 2 years. So there's a turnaround in the trend in the number of kids registering in the city of Jerusalem. There is growth in the Arab, and there is growth in the ultra-Orthodox, but we've moved from decrease to stability or small scaling of the population. So there is a trend, and I believe things are related. Education is related to culture, to atmosphere. They're all related. So we're working on each parameter separately and all parameters together that could turn the city around.
This says that there were 58 demolitions in West Jerusalem and 23 in the East Jerusalem. What are some of the reasons for demolitions? Are there varied reasons?
Sure. Well, usually we either get a complaint by neighbors. That's, by the way, most of the cases. Most of the cases is complaint by a neighbor that somebody's building improperly or in a place that you're not allowed to, and somebody's suffering from that. That complaint is developed in the municipality, and we go and we check if it's according to the rule of law. And if it's not according to the rule of law, we go to court. And if the courts agree that this indeed is not according to the rule of law, they develop a court order to do whatever the court decides to do. And then the municipality has to obey the law and fulfill the court cases. And that's exactly what we do, like any other city in the world.
Not having a building permit would be a reason to destroy the structure that's completed?
Well, there are thousands of cases. And there are only hundreds developed to become, to take a structure down. There's a severe. There are different degrees of severeness, and naturally we use common sense, like any other municipality, when to use the more severe. We request more severe cases to the severe cases, and we may go. Most of them go with a fine or something else rather than. To take a structure down. Look, there's the common practice is that in East Jerusalem there are 20,000 illegal structures.
Illegal meaning built without permits? Or
yes. Yes, exactly. Or have illegal expansions. You're talking about big numbers. Now that's not done in one day, naturally, you understand. So when you talk about such scope of a challenge, the only rational and reasonable way to do this is on the rezoning concept that I've shared with you. Because there's no way in the world. If you ignore it, there's no rule of law. And you can't take them. It would be stupid and foolish to take them all to court. And the rezoning process is for the benefit of the residents. It dramatically decreases the tension. And this is the process I'm going to go through all around the city. In the past, by the way, most of these 20,000 illegal buildings are usually Arabs in East Jerusalem. And it's not common practice for Jews to build this way. So you would see that throughout the years, the average number of removing illegal structures was 100, 120 a year. A third would be in the west side and two-thirds in the east side of the city. This year, because of all the shakeup, there is we went forwards in West Jerusalem with no change, and in East Jerusalem, since we need a police escort, there was a slowdown because of the situation. From my perspective, once we get the rezoning, I by far prefer the rezoning and working on financial punishment for people that did not obey the law, rather than taking down structures, although in extreme cases we'll have to do that just to make sure that the rule of law is spread evenly and honestly throughout the city.
You know any cases where Arabs complained against an Arab neighbor?
Of course, it's most of the cases.
And Arabs complaining against a Jewish neighbor, has that ever happened?
People complain all the time.
Can you take down a Jewish house if an Arab complained, if they didn't have a building permit?
We do that all the time. If you'd like, you look at the list of the 54... we don't care who the complaint is. If it's if it's true, and if it's severe, we'll take action. I sign. There's two kind of cases. If it's somebody lives in it, it's got to go through court. But if they've just started building illegally, there's a shortcut that the mayor of any city could order it to be removed immediately. before people. So if you see a beginning of a building and it's illegal, they could challenge any, people could challenge that in court as well. And I use that right in just in cases that I find that it's really severe and extreme. Most of them are done in this year are in west side of the city. And when we show this, half of the cases, they take them down themselves because they understand they're doing something wrong.
Why did they start? You'd think they'd get the message by now that not to build without a permit.
I don't know. Don't ask me why criminals, ask me criminal mind. I don't know.
When will you evacuate the Bajanatan building? This is in your Shield 1 area you were talking about. And the Supreme Court told you to evacuate this, I believe.
The Supreme Court did not say only in that. They said do them all. And I'm committed to fulfill all the Supreme Court orders. And as I shared with you earlier, the challenge in that neighborhood is not one building, it's 42 buildings. My preference and my recommendation is wait with them all until the rezoning takes place. And then it's much, much easier. You've decreased tension. And to act on the court orders after rezoning decreases a lot of tension. More than that, I believe that on the rezoning, as I said earlier, most of the court cases will become obsolete, and we'll only have to focus on the buildings that are, at least at the beginning, that are over four stories or that are built right in the middle of the road or things that are extreme. And Bet Yonatan will be dealt with because it's an illegal building. By the way, these are Jews that bought the building from Arabs. And it's a six-story building, and for them to get any kind of permit, they will have to shave two stories, which is more severe punishment than the courts currently gave them, which is just to seal the building. So from my perspective, my recommendation is finish the rezoning. Anybody who wants a license, and there are 20 buildings over four stories, will have to shave two stories in order to get a license. And if they don't, we'll act on them.
Let's just take a couple more, if there are. One or two more. I see there aren't. Last chance. Going, gone.
I'll ask one more. Go. Back to politics a little bit. After the Biden visit, it was a year ago, I think Prime Minister Netanyahu did slow down, or did pressure you, am I right, to slow building down in East Jerusalem. After it was at Har Homa, I believe?
Yeah. What happened there, I think that if anything, the government was shocked. It's like, I gave the analogy, if one day you wake up and somebody gives you your best friend gives you two flaps on the face. What did you do wrong? It was a complete surprise what the administration actually wants from us. It's not standard. It doesn't make any logical sense to the vision and the plans, and there's no freeze in Jerusalem. Nobody ever declared any freeze in Jerusalem, so we're all working according to the master plan, which is honest and fair. And it was sort of a big shakeout. What does the U.S. administration want? So there's a natural, if you'd like, not a delay, shock of the Israeli government. They said, wait a minute, let's try and figure out, from respect to the American government, let's try and figure out what's going on here. Now, the permits that we give in the municipality, more than two-thirds of it is private land. It's not governmentally owned. You can't slow down an entrepreneur or a businessman, Arab, Jew, Christian, Muslim, doesn't matter, that comes and wants the permit. So we have not stopped the private permits. Some of the pieces of the property, part of the two-thirds of the Jewish planned expansion, is government. And they did slow a little bit before trying to figure out. Hopefully that's part of the past.
How did it impact your relationship with Prime Minister Netanyahu, or did it?
Not at all. I think we share the same vision. I understand the question that was posed. My recommendation is and was and will be to continue according to the plan. It's an honest plan and fair plan, so stick to the plan. And that's indeed what's I believe we're back to the plan.
Judging by what you said earlier, the 1967 borders in Jerusalem, in any case, will never be part of the Palestinian state.
You know how many lines we have in Jerusalem? 67, 48, 1,000, 800, 2,000 years ago. We have, choose a line, we've got it. Okay?
They chose the 67.
It doesn't make any sense. It makes less sense than any other line that you would like to follow. And it doesn't make any sense. And people skilled in the art will come and tell you that there's no rationale behind it.
Well, thanks so much to our guest.
I have a question.
Sorry, yes.
And I'm just here, Mayor, just to listen in, and I'm a guest. But I went to Jerusalem a few years ago, and there was a feeling that when I went to the Arab, I remember going as a child, and when I went, I think it was 4 or 5 years ago, before you were mayor, so not under your regime, while you were in office, partly. I was told that my trip in the Arab quarter might be somewhat dangerous by my guide. I was given this whole shtick that, I don't know what, that to walk around really in the Arab quarter was somewhat dangerous. Is that still the case? And why is that the case? And is there a way that this can somehow change? Because there were times when
I was in
New York City that it was also dangerous to walk in Central Park and other parts, and now it's not. So these things change over time.
It's an interesting point you made. This summer, we had the Light Festival and a couple of other festivals in the Old City. 250,000 people came to the Old City in Jerusalem at night. Since 67, people don't remember so many people coming to the Old City, enjoying every second of it. And it was in the Christian quarter, the Muslim quarter, and the Jewish quarter, the Armenian quarter. It was a phenomenal success. And if anything, there's a stronger demand from the residents to continue that investment. It was a nice investment that proved itself. In order to turn it around, again, I'm focused on the next, in Silwan, the King's Garden. King's Garden, the rezoning process we're going through King's Garden, and I'm happy to leave you a booklet, is how to take a slum, just a slum, with 88 illegal structures in an area, in a zoning area, which is green, you're not allowed to build at all, like Central Park, okay? One of the most sensitive places in the world. The closest valley, Kidron Valley, the closest to the Temple Mount. And in the rezoning process, we've given up half of the green area, enable them to build 3,000 square meters of commerce, restaurants, and tourism services, and to build for residents second and third floor. So there's enough room for all the residents that live there to take the water of the Kidron, of the Shiloach, and to run it through the valley and leave the eastern part, business and business, commerce, and then residential, and to leave the rest as an open park for people to come and enjoy. You could turn that into, have you been to Liad Yerushalayim Shama, Kfar Arvi?
Abu Gosh.
Abu Gosh? Abu Gosh. Abu Gosh next to Jerusalem, or the Old City?
Humus.
Right. the potential of taking that little neighborhood and turning it into one of the destinations in Jerusalem for commerce, for food, to create one of the nicest places in Jerusalem. It's a huge potential. Huge upside in the economics. And by rezoning from all green, slum, everything illegal, to have a new zoning with 2/3 of the current buildings turn legal, create commerce opportunities, give them a license, and no evictions because people could live in the neighborhood, it's a huge change. Now, once you do that, then it can turn from a place with a negative feeling to a big upside for the residents in the area, including to create jobs, and it's very complementary to the area. It is a classic win-win, and that's the plan. The reason I'm saying that is that if people get out of their politics and focus on what is the right thing to do in Jerusalem, they understand what we're doing, and they're supportive. And by doing that, we're encouraging a better feeling, decreasing tension. Right now, there's a lot, everyone can lose. It's a lose-lose situation. I want to turn that into a win-win one. And that changes people's mindset.
Would you like to be Prime Minister one day?
No.
On that note, thanks so much to our guest, Mayor Nir Barkat, for taking the time to join us. And let me just say that the next time you're in Jerusalem, our office is running great bus tours, guided bus tours, guided by, who is what's her name? Miri Eisen, who is a former army spokeswoman. They're going into these neighborhoods and looking at them one by one in real detail. And let me just say also that if there's anything that we can ever do for you to serve you better, to help you with information, you should not hesitate to call either Jennifer or myself. And so, thanks so much.
Thank you.
We're at your service as well. If you have any questions, you could pass it on through my staff. We'll be happy to help.
Thank you very much.
Okay.
Jennifer.
You're most welcome. At your service.
I think we met in someone's home.
Did you say if you met?
I think it was Chris.
Yeah. It's possible.